And I'm pleased to be joined in studio by Barrington Antonio Irving. Good afternoon, Barrington.
Afternoon.
So tell us about your, first of all, welcome to AirVenture. Is this your first time at
third.
Oshkosh?
It's my third.
Oh, it's your third time.
Third time.
All right. Well, tell us about your accomplishment this last year.
Well, just recently on June 27th, I just finished flying solo around the world. That made me the youngest person ever to do so and the first person of black descent to also do so.
What type of airplane did you use?
Columbia 400.
Nice.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. And, you know, before no one wanted to sponsor me for this flight, and I approached Columbia and said, you know, if I can get the individual pieces sponsored, will you honor that and assemble the aircraft? And that's what they did, and was able to get the engine sponsored by Continental, the cockpit system by Avedine, speed, brakes, precise flight, turbochargers, Kelly Airspace, over 300,000 in donated parts. And, you know, I started off from a grassroots effort, and I developed my own nonprofit organization called Experience Aviation to get students in Miami involved in the aviation industry.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. You're from the Miami area?
Yes, yes.
And where did you learn to fly?
In Miami. I learned out of Pelican Airways in Miami.
Was that Tamiami?
It's at North Perry Airport.
North Perry, okay.
And I also learned to fly also a little bit at Opa-locka Airport also.
Okay, yeah. I heard Opa-locka is being slated for a bye-bye down there.
No, they're revamping it.
Are they?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
A lot of
bad rumor then.
Yeah, bad rumor. Lots of hangars going up, and FBOs are coming in. Before it was one, and now we have about a good four or five there now.
Good deal.
Yeah.
So where did you get the idea to fly around the world?
Well, how I got involved in aviation, a United Airlines captain walked up to me and basically said, "Hey, son, have you ever thought of becoming a pilot?" From that moment on, after speaking with him, he began to mentor me. I fell in love with aviation, and I said, "What if I could do the same thing?"
And what was his name?
Gary Robinson.
Okay.
Gary Robinson. And I said, "You know, what if I could do the same thing to prove a point to other kids, so that they too can get involved in aviation, no matter where you're coming from, what you have, what you don't have, just about following a dream." And this is how it started.
How long have you known you wanted to fly?
Had no intentions to fly. Never even thought I was smart enough to fly until I met Gary right before I turned 16 years of age, and researched aviation for quite some time. Turned down a lot of football scholarships to some top schools, and after graduation, just started off washing airplanes, hanging out at the airport, and got my first license at 19.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about your trip. Where did it start? Miami, I guess.
Yeah, started from Miami on March 23rd. It took me 97 days headed eastbound. First all the way up north to St. John's, Canada, then over to the Azores, then Spain, Italy, Greece, Egypt, Dubai, India, Bangkok, Hong Kong, Japan. Worked my way back into the States, and it was a challenging journey with sandstorms, monsoons, thunderstorms, and really tested me both mentally, physically, and I lost about a good 15 pounds.
Eating airport bum food.
Yeah, you know.
That you packed in your bag to take with you, right? So you wouldn't miss it from when you were working at the FBO.
Exactly. It's funny when...
Stick the vending machine in the Columbia there.
I wish I could. No, I was pretty cramped up in there with the extra fuel I had on board.
Tell us a little bit about that. Did they make you a special tank for that?
Yes, I had to get a special tank made, and that tank carried about an extra 75 gallons. And... had it installed, and that was the only major modification to the aircraft. Everything else was just a HF radio and satellite radios.
I assume that all this international overwater flying was brand new to you.
Oh, yes.
What kind of preparations did you have to do?
Well, I did survival training with Survival Systems USA. I also did a flight down to Jamaica, and then from Jamaica to Cartagena and Medellin, Colombia, in the Columbia 400. And, even for mountain flying, flew over in the Rockies, and the highest mountain we have in Florida is the back of an alligator, so I had to get my practice in. But, I developed my own training course and just stuck to it and showed the insurers and others that, hey, you know, I was dead serious about this project.
Who did your insurance?
Frank Crystal and Company.
Okay.
Yeah.
What were some of the unique challenges that that you faced on this flight?
Definitely a lot of the customs, the permits, the navigation fees, and the different rules, and sometimes you face a bit of hostility being an American, and And it's very challenging, especially from the flight planning standpoint, choosing your route, studying those who were able to successfully fly around the world, and those who failed, and why were they successful and why did they fail?
And what did you learn? What I guess while you were looking over the stuff and studying for your trip, what raised your eyebrows the most? What was something that
crossing the North Pacific, coming back in? Did I want to go through Hawaii, or did I want to try to go through Russia? Or, I mean, I just basically did my own thing and went through Shemi, Alaska, along the Aleutian Islands. And it was a tremendous experience. Wind shifting from all directions, close to 100 miles per hour. Whole flight was IFR. And it was pretty tough. It was an almost 9-hour flight.
Wow. Now, and you dealt with what the who were you in contact with the whole time?
Universal Weather. They handled all my flight planning.
Okay.
And Chevron, you know, coordinated with us by shipping us fuel to various locations across the globe.
This company, Universal, were they also flight following you? Were they your contact on HF primarily?
Yes,
like primarily. Dispatch?
Yes. They were like my own private dispatch. So that really helped out quite a bit. And with the satellite phone also, I was able to communicate quite well with everyone.
Oh, that's a technology that we didn't have a while back. Now, you were in touch with somebody at all times, so you always knew, and of course you had the flight planned leg by leg by leg. Mm-hmm. Was there a time where on the trip you had done all this extensive planning, this particular leg was planned out perfectly, but things didn't really go as planned?
Yeah, that happened in Egypt and also in Japan, northern Japan. In Egypt, I had to deal with sandstorms and cut it short and land in Cairo, Egypt, rather than fly nonstop to Luxor, Egypt. Also had to deal with that in northern Japan with the situation of fuel and shortening the distance from almost 1,600 miles to 1,400 miles. 200 miles made that much more of a difference for me.
So when that happens and you had this diversion, basically, mm-hmm. what kind of preparation did you have for diversions? Did you have a separate kit, a diversion kit?
Separate kit. Of course, you have your alternates and everything filed in the plan, and you constantly pay attention to the weather that's going on there. And, you know, you just try to keep it simple the same way you would fly, you know, from Miami to Orlando. You know, and you look at, okay, what are my options? What are my alternates? And most importantly, staying within the limits of yourself as a pilot and within the limits of the aircraft. And I promised all my sponsors I would do that. And you know, when I left for this flight, I only had 640 hours. So,
wow.
You know, very, very low time and low experience.
How many hours do you have now?
Close to 750.
And how long did the trip take? How many hours did you actually log?
I haven't even had time to add up my logbook since I've been back with all the media attention, but it took 97 days to complete.
Wow, that is a long
trip.
Yeah,
but the aircraft performed remarkably. Even the engine from St. John's to the Azores across the North Atlantic, 9 hours, only burned half a quart of oil. Amazing.
Wow, that's phenomenal. That's perfect.
TSI 0550.
Now, from the technical standpoint, we talked about that. Let's talk about some social aspects or some.
That's pretty tough. That's pretty tough dealing with the various cultures and learning their rituals and practices and so forth. But, you know, you gain a newfound respect for that. And, you know, all of these places I've never been to ever in my life. So it was a humbling experience to see things such as exotic as Dubai, where a 16-year-old can own a Ferrari. To something, you know, as simple as in some parts of India, you know, where the poverty level is so sad. So you really was able to learn a lot and also see a lot.
So, Barrington, what's next for you?
Well, I have the Experience Aviation Learning Center that I started down in Miami, and looking forward to taking that to the next level. We're getting ready to launch our after-school program, get kids off the streets, and also at the same time offer daytime field trips to the facility for schools and so forth. So we're pretty excited about that, and we're truly looking forward to right now working on a huge initiative with NASA and a few others to address the shortage of engineers. I just personally feel that if we're going to effectively address the shortage of professionals within aviation, we must first start with engineers. They're the ones that, you know, develop all the cool things that attract everyone and get involved in aviation in the first place. So that's my first step.
Well, Barrington, you're somebody that we can all be very, very proud of.
Thank you.
A fantastic trip, it sounds like.
I'm just grateful to be part of it, and you all are doing a great job, EAA, and just grateful to be part of the students that you're working with.
Thank you. Barrington Antonio Irving of Experience Aviation in Miami, Florida. It was a pleasure having you.